It's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown. Out there on the edge of the prairie, the crocuses are up and the tulips are up, and then we got a little bit of snow overnight, but nobody said a word about it. We don't talk about this sort of thing. We just have to be able to look at snow on the ground in the middle of April and not see it whatsoever. It's part of Minnesota. Minnesota, you don't move to Minnesota for a temperate climate. This is theater, is what that is. You don't go to the theater to hear people talk murmuring, comforting talk to each other for 90 minutes. You go for a drama. That's Minnesota. That's weather in Minnesota. It's not about climate. It's about excitement. And then when spring finally comes and you hear the loons out on the lake as you did this week, their mournful cries in the morning and those thrilling cries at night, they're out there mating. They've been married for years. They're monogamous. They're faithful. And yet they still are passionate about each other. It's a glorious thing. The ice went out on the lake Sunday night. And so the Pontiac went through the ice, which is part of the Guess the Ice Melt contest. And the winner of the contest was Dorothy. So she wins the trolling motor. She never goes fishing. And so now she has a trolling motor. And them that wants it has not. And them who don't has it. And it's the same the whole world over. The first lawnmower was heard on Sunday. That was Mr. Magan Dance, who kind of leads the way in everything. He'd fertilized his lawn a week before, so it was greener than other lawns, and he was out there mowing it back and forth and back and forth, and then crosswise both ways. He had a couple of enormous hydrangea plants that he had set out on his front walk. It was kind of show-offy to people in Lake Wobegon. You don't necessarily want to have the best lawn in your block. Also, you don't want the crappiest. You want to be somewhere in the middle. But that one lawnmower on Sunday afternoon at the Magan Dance's triggered all these other neighbors to get out and mow their lawns as well, all up and down McKinley Street. You could see them. Leroy, our town constable, got to work on his lawn while Eleanor was off at church. He usually gets fertilizer in a bag, but he'd gone out to his cousin Roger's farm, and he got some cow manure, and he brought a whole trailer load of it in, and he dumped it behind the house where he'd also had a big load of black dirt, and the idea was that he was going to mix in the manure with the dirt and then scatter that on the lawn. This was out by the corner of the garage, which he was supposed to sweep and did not. He was in the midst of spring attention deficit disorder and sort of moving from one thing to another. And here was the deck that he started 3 years ago, which is not finished yet. And Eleanor was off at church, and he got started with his rototiller, and he was mixing up the manure with the dirt, but the manure was wetter than he expected it to be, so it was sticking to the teeth of the rototiller. And after a while, he turned off the rototiller and he headed over to his cousin Harold's house, which is down the street, to help him fix his lawnmower. Harold wanted to borrow some tools, but Leroy didn't want to lend him tools because he never returns them, so he went down to help Harold fix the lawnmower, and then they sat down and started to talk about American policy in Libya, and that was when Eleanor came home from church to find the place smelling like a feedlot and all of this manure, and her husband hadn't done anything, hadn't cleaned out the gutter, hadn't cleaned out the garage, and there he was down the street. She could have yelled to him, but she didn't. She didn't say anything. It was beyond words. Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. We have been enduring a kind of a non-winter in Minnesota. It's been in the 40s, and there's been no skating, no sliding. It's very strange there. The Bloodmobile came the other day to collect blood, and they noticed, to nobody's surprise, that people's blood was thinner because we've had this mild winter, usually people from Minnesota produce a very thick blood, which is in demand for blood transfusions, especially in California. It's sold here at a premium price. It's much thicker because we absorb certain proteins, and the blood is saltier, which is true of most carnivores. And this is a blood which has powerful carnivorous hormones in it, so that we have, during the dead of winter, episodes every day of very powerful bloodlust, which makes the blood very appealing for transfusions for people who are stockbrokers and who are lawyers. Sometimes walking around town, we look at a dog who's walking around, we just feel this urge to go after it and get it down on the ground. Not a greyhound, but we don't have greyhounds in Lake Wobegon. Not a terrier, but a meteor dog, a beagle, say, or some long-haired dog. Sometimes people as well, vegetarians especially. We feel a great urge. Of course, we don't act on it, but a great urge. Just get them down and cut their throats and to devour them. They look good. And because they are vegetarians, we know that they would not resist, which of course makes them even more attractive to us. They're studying science in the schools. They don't study this sort of thing, of course. They're studying the planets in the fourth grade and learning that you can memorize the planets by the sentence, "My very educated mother just served us nachos." Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. It used to, the mother used to serve us 9 pizzas, but now she's just serving nachos since Pluto was downgraded. They have the unit on the sex education unit in the fifth grade in the Lake Wobegon schools, and the children are going off to learn whatever they're going to learn from teachers who tell them that they should go home and ask their parents any questions that they feel embarrassed to ask in school. I don't know where teachers get this idea. They get it out of a book. They don't get it from talking to parents, that's for sure. Pastor Liz was spotted coming into Lake Wobegon. They weren't sure who it was at first. Cindy Headland, who saw her about 6 o'clock in the morning, she saw a woman walking along the gravel road south of town, and she was coming towards town. She had a big backpack on her back, and she carried a sleeping bag and a pad as well. And she was walking along. She looked a little damp and wet, but she had a bounce to her step. She came into town. The constables, Gary and Leroy, spotted her about 6:30, and they pulled over and they asked her where she was going. She said she was coming to Lake Wobegon. She'd come all the way from New Jersey. She was a Lutheran pastor. She'd had a call from the Holy Spirit to come and serve this church. Well, they've heard a lot of things as constables. They never heard that. They said, "Where are you going to stay?" Well, she said, "Is there a motel in town?" "No," they said, "there is, but you don't want to stay in that motel." Well, she said, "I'll find a place." She went into the Chatterbox Cafe, and she had a cup of coffee and one of Dorothy's big cinnamon rolls. Darlene served it to her, thought she smelled of liniment. They were still puzzled who she was. And then she came out of the Chatterbox Cafe a little bit before 7 o'clock, and Val Tollefson saw her coming in. Val Tollefson is the president of the Council of Lake Wobegon Lutheran Church, and he said she crossed over the street to go into the mercantile. She walked in. Cliff had just opened the door, and there he was behind the counter. She asked if he had some bobby pins. Well, yes, he did. He uses them himself. He has to rig up his hair every morning. It's the most imaginative and beautiful comb over. It's like a birdcage around the top of his head, this artful combination of hairspray and bobby pins. He sold her a couple of cards of bobby pins and a bar of soap as well. And the next person to see her was Clint Bunsen, who is the chairman of the search committee and who had met with her down in Minneapolis. He was in his boat. He was quietly fishing for bass. about 100 yards offshore when he saw, as the sun was coming through the clouds, he saw a woman bathing in shallow water. A naked woman was bathing in shallow water. And he hoped it wasn't her, and then he realized it was. A tall, handsome woman in water up to her knees was soaping herself. And he realized that he should have yelled at that moment to tell her that he was there. And his boat was drifting toward shore. And now he didn't dare start the motor because he'd been looking at her now for a minute and a half. I was up in Lake Wobegon this last week. I was there to visit my mother, who is 96. Most of the time she's 96. Some of the time she's 37. And once in a while she's 11 or 12. Some people call it dementia. I call it living history. She's a storyteller, and there's no reason a storyteller should limit herself to the past tense. Sometimes you come there and you are in the 21st century, and then suddenly you're in 1937, and Franklin D. Roosevelt is president again, and there's a whole new list of characters that you have to keep track of. And it's a challenge to people. It's like being in a play without a script. And then other times she's very young. I like this. This is the truth behind all stories. All stories take place at all times, you see. We live our lives at all times. We are still children even as we are adults. And life is many layered and complicated. So you sit with your 96-year-old mother and she's asking you to forgive her for something. And it's something she did as a young woman, and now you realize that you are her father, and she's asking you to forgive her for something that he probably never would have forgiven her for, but you do, because the thing she's asking forgiveness for is something that led to your existence. It's a complicated thing. So I went down to the Chatterbox Cafe afterward. I was just going to go off, sit in the corner and read my New York Times. But I was walking past the counter, and there was Carl Krebsbach and Clint Bunsen. And there was an empty stool there, two of them. And so he looked up at me, Carl did, so I felt I had to sit down, and so I did. Hi, how are you? Fine. Kind of cold out, isn't it? Yeah, it's cold out. Sat there for a while, searching for conversation, you know. So, what do you think about what's going on in Egypt here? I said. Yeah, they said, yeah, that's something. That's some million people out in a square. That would be even better in cold weather. Million people create a lot of heat. Yeah, they say, yep, yes, sir. Uh-huh. Virgil died this last week, Carl says. He was in our scout troop, you remember? Yeah, 64. That's kind of young. He thought so, too. Oh, he fought it for several years. Cancer took him down. Oh, he really thought he was going to get over it. Full of hope, he was. I think hope was probably what killed him, actually.